Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm gonna let the song play for a while because it might be the best thing about the show tonight. just something to think about. You're listening live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. If I could see, it'd be good. Day 8. Okay.
That's smooth.
I keep forgetting that there's a hard stop on that opening. If it hits a minute, there's nothing left to talk about. Thank you for listening to Life from the Path. It's good to have you. Life from the Path is brought to you by our two great sponsors, the Eisenhower Team and Westfield Veterinary Hospital. And I want to thank them for letting us be on the air.
I feel like Eisenhower coming in next week.
Did you call him the Big Easy earlier?
I may have called him the Big Easy. Here's the funny part. Is like, he sent me a text message and said, hey, we're going to try to make it in next Monday. I'm like, great. That, you know, it'd be great to see you. And then I send it to him, and I get an auto text back that says, I may be unreachable by text message. Please call this number. I'm like, whatever. You just sent me a text message. I don't even know how to set up that auto reply. Do you guys know how to do that?
I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it from now on. Like,
kind of makes you sound important, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to have mine say encouraging things like, thanks a million, brother. You know, you're one of the best. I can't say you're the best. I do say I'm on it. That's my standard reply.
Here's what we got going on the show this week. So, big question is the devastation that was in the Philippines with the hurricane is where was God? Where was God in the Philippines when 10,000 people were getting hit by a massive hurricane? Do we misunderstand God by asking that question? Someone who is in that position, what's the answer to somebody in that position? And because I think that shows up a lot when you're talking about any type of what we'd otherwise call natural disaster. Is the question is obviously, if you serve a sovereign God who could do something about it, why doesn't he? And so we're going to try to tackle that. We also got advice on Dear Life from the Path. Rick Gray's in studio. He's got some Pope style coming at you. He's going to, as if someone has mistaken Mr. Rick Gray for the Pope, he's going to give some advice out on the podium. We were talking about the Pope. There's been a pretty widely shared picture of him kissing a man with some physical deformity. And that actually really did – that hit me this week because we were talking about with some of the guys in the church just about how we how you open up your life to some of the people that are around you. And I'm generally hesitant, to be honest with you, because I just assume people don't want me like – that my any insertion of myself into their life would be kind of like a button in. You know, like shoving myself in is like, hey, tell me about your problems. Tell me about your woes. I want to help you. I want to hug you. I don't know. I think I have that wrong to a certain extent. And there are some of that is about what people are willing to accept. But some of that is about how willing are you to be involved in somebody else's life? Like, how close are you willing to get? Are you willing to push a little bit beyond the shallow formalities and actually be in community with people? And that's not just people's willingness for you to do that. You have to be willing to want to do that. And so anyway, that kind of brought me to that just a little bit, kind of seeing that picture. Because my question is like, if that guy, if that same dude were to come up to me, there's nothing about his physical appearance that I think would you know, push me away or anything. I'm not bothered by that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I mean, I'd like to put on some kind of airs that I wouldn't be slightly creeped out, but I think I'd be slightly creeped out.
I don't think so. I don't think I have an issue with that. I mean, whatever.
Don't you feel the same way when you find like a lady with a mustache or something? All you can think about is the mustache?
I'm not saying I wouldn't think about it. I'm not saying I wouldn't notice it.
All right.
I'm a human. If there's a guy who's got like a cone growing out of his head, that's going to come to my attention, you know? But I think the thing is like, let's say a guy came up like that. I would feel very, my barrier is how much does that guy want me to engage with him? You know, the Pope kissed him on the head. Of course, now he's the Pope. He can get away with that kind of stuff, I guess. But like, if someone came up,
that's true. Like, you can't just go randomly kissing people on the head without that hat on.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be way different if he was like wearing street like jeans and a baseball cap and he just went kissing dudes
on
the head.
What up? Licentiousness.
But yeah, no, that guy's going to be defensive about people. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Expect a negative reaction.
Yeah, so I mean, the Pope has a little bit of leeway, and I'm just thinking, your average guy, I would like to think that I could comfort someone like that, or show them love, or show them acceptance, but I'm not sure how much they want. I think like that's my barriers. Is like if that guy came up and I gave him a hug, would he be like, "What are you doing? Like,
leave me alone, freak."
I don't need your creep hug.
Here's the thing: like I feel like that sometimes. Like, who do you think you are loving on me? You know what I'm saying? Like people kind of bounce back at you, like I need your love. You know what I'm saying? Like I need attention from you. Thanks for coming down to my level, King. Whoever
you think
you
you're
are.
The Pope?
Yeah. I mean, is it a bigger deal because it's from the Pope, or is it big enough deal that it's the like love is being shown? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it enough to be loved by anybody, or does it have to be somebody with fancy clothes?
And so I think the deal is I think I default to being way too far past that. Like, is it really – like, I've got the worst scenario in my mind where I give a hug to this man, and he, like, is disgusted by me.
And they penguin arm you. You know, like, stick both their arms yeah. way back behind him.
And I'm the awkward guy trying to hug another man while he's fighting it. There's nothing you want to do in public like that.
No, this is important. I need to do this. See, it's for you.
The way you get around that is just be completely accepting of awkward hugs. That's all you need to do is – if you're mid-hug and someone starts penguin arms, just go with it, man. Just continue that hug.
I would, like, move
make
lower
it,
and try to get around the waist.
Make it as awkward as possible,
and make
then
it
you
a
have
chest
a story
bump.
To tell. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Dude. Or you go penguin arm, too. Just, like, kind of... Or is this how we're going to hug?
I feel like if you chest bump a guy that penguin arm you, you're going to knock him over.
Well, you had it coming.
If I chest bump a guy anywhere, I think
see,
I'm going to knock him
they
over.
They never cover this in Sunday school, how to love an awkward man. You know what I'm saying?
Don't like reject my love.
They make it sound as soon as you accept the love of Jesus Christ and want to spend it around that everyone's going to lovingly take it. And instead there's a bunch of awkward doofuses out there that don't know how to react correctly.
I need to hug somebody, but they don't like my hugs. What do I do in that case?
Actually, you know what? I've been on the other side of that, though. Like,
yeah.
Like people always like, especially when something big happens or something real sad or, you know, they're like, how you doing? Here's the thing. Some people are, they lead into hugs, right? Like, let's say you're feeling kind of down in the mouth, and you're like, I'm not feeling right. And they're like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, if I tell you, you're going to want to hug me. And that's not what I want, you know? But then you tell them anyway, just try to be honest, and here they come, blah. You know, they're looking for the hug. I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted, you know? And everyone thinks, no, you really do secretly want one. I secretly do not want one. I secretly and publicly do not want a hug from you. Just right now. Now's not the time, you know? But they're any excuse to dump a hug out, that's them. It's
yeah,
like they're
yeah.
the first thing they have in their pocket is never a buck or a nickel or a piece of gum. It's always a hug. What can
Here,
I
have
do
a
for
lifesaver.
You? It's hug time.
See, I feel bad because I'm that guy. I'm more than happy to give hugs out to complete and total strangers. I've done it before and I continue.
No, you don't just hug them. You squeeze them. You're trying to hurt them.
I'm not trying to like bear hug everyone on the streets. That's not how I roll. Okay, I might have done that at one point in time or another, but. I don't see the problem with it. I guess that's just kind of how I accept physical love, I guess. I don't know. I'm totally cool
you
with hugs.
You perpetrate physical love. That's not an acceptance. That's an assault, brother.
Yeah. Well, I accept you hugs, know what? Too. I've gotten some seriously awkward hugs in my life, and I'm not going to go into them. But there have been some seriously, like, what are you doing hugging me hugs that I've gotten in my
like
life.
Like from a kangaroo? Because that would be
at
out,
one
of
point
out
time,
of sight, man.
A rhinoceros got up on its hind legs and tried to hug me. It was awkward. I penguin armed, and it just came in for a chest bump, and it knocked me over. But no.
I thought you were asking for it.
I've gotten some awkward hugs in my life, but I'm completely cool with still giving them.
A similar example is you know, I've done some stuff working with, like, homeless folk and stuff. And I'll see other people in there, and they're giving hugs and saying hi and stuff, and it just makes me feel really awkward because I feel like, I mean, I don't really know you, and you don't know me. Does it feel placating if I'm like, hi, how you doing? I care about your plight.
Yeah. You know where I did this at? Is at a wedding. It was one of my wife's friends that was getting married, and it was a dude, and he was marrying the lady, and you know, like, and so we were like third row from the back. I'm like. Hopefully they just leave and then, you know, the usher excuses. No, here they come, right? Handshaking and hugging. I'm like, oh, no.
And everybody's all hugging.
Like, I've met this woman like one time. What am I supposed to do? Go in for the handshake or do the hug or like just kind of keep my hands to myself and silently walk by? I'm like, this is the most awkward social situation ever. I didn't know how to react. I was freaking out. My wife's like, you've got to calm down. You're looking obvious. I'm like, I seriously don't know what to do.
Wet this off your brow.
Like, I've never been so anxiety ridden in my life. I'm like, what if I offer a hug? And she's like, no, we've just met. I'm like, that's awkward too. I didn't know how to react. And so I went with the,
I'd go for the fist bump.
No, I passed by. I kind of did that.
I don't know you.
In fact, I cowardly hid behind my wife and let her do the affection. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just with her.
Hi, baby. Lead me in this one.
I'm not a huggy guy, but I'm a touchy guy. Like, I'll like shake a hand and like touch him on the elbow or something the same. It's probably kind of creepy in itself.
Oh, like an old deacon.
Maybe that's it. I probably watched it on TV and thought, no, that's the way to love people. You're giving them their distance, giving them their bubble, but you're sort of like, yeah, I care. Yeah.
See, because
it's an extra hand.
Like Richard Dawson showed us, if you're going to kiss them, you got to kiss all of them.
Well, that's,
you know.
That's
so
true.
So if you're going to hug people, you got to give hugs all the way around.
It's kind of a shoulder hug, more of a, hey, you, yay, yeah, here.
Don't rub the shoulder. That's weirder.
I don't rub it.
You were just doing.
Okay. Here's the deal. If you're gonna greet another person in anything that's not a handshake or a hug, you need to land that hand and keep it there.
Exactly. How you doing? Little back rub.
And a two-handed back rub hug is not acceptable in any social situation.
I call this the racetrack. That's what I call it.
Get away from me, Jesus, man.
All right, the Pope seems to be able to pull this off. Dang. We need to call him.
I was going to say, we need to call him. Hey, how do we give hugs?
He still looks manly doing that stuff.
I think it's the robes, which is the surprising part. Everyone is completely accepting of him doing whatever.
He's a conundrum.
I don't think us wearing robes hugging people would go over
right,
well.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think anyone can pull it off.
That was the downfall of the Jesuits.
I think it's that.
I'm here for the hug.
All
right. Well, I tell you, if you got any advice on the guys from Life and the Path on how to properly handle hugging in a situation, maybe you've been on the other side of that. Like you've been in some kind of down circumstances and you have large groups of folks that know about it and are coming to talk to you. Like, is it awkward if someone comes and hugs you? Or, is that a proper way to show affection, or do you feel placated by them kind of doing that? Like they just feel like they need to, and they got their hug in. It just feels a little disingenuous to me. And maybe it's a heart conflict that says I'm here to help, but I know that I haven't like given everything I could to make this thing happen. You know, like we went to the homeless benefit. I don't know, he made chili or whatever, and they bring them all in, and they eat the chili. And it was great. And I talked to a bunch of different dudes. One of them gave my kids like a light up candle they gave away. It was a cool night. You know, but I felt like anything that I was trying to do was just like a show for the night, because it's not like I spend a bunch of days during my year helping out homeless guys. It felt half committal to me. And then my discussion with them kind of felt fake. And I don't think that's true. I think it was a time of appreciation and they set up the event for that type of thing. But I think there's just something in the back of my mind that says like, you know, what are you cutting out of here? And you just kind of buzz out of that guy. I did try to follow up with one of them, though, and I couldn't find him. Like, I wrote down his name. I was going to pop back into the shelter. That's the problem. Squirrely trying to get a hold of him, you know?
You know, it's actually kind of funny, though. You touched on a subject that I don't know, like, it really brings an irritation to me sometimes. It's like, usually events in general, like charity events in general, they irk me the wrong way. Because, like, they're always like, hey, let's set up an event, and we'll collect a bunch of canned goods, and we'll do this, and like... You know what I don't set up an event for? Going to work every day. You know why? Because that's just what I do, you know? And so, like, if you truly had a heart for helping homeless people, you would just be doing it without the event, with no T-shirt. You would just be down there, right? And we'd be like, where's so-and-so? They're helping the homeless people. We can't barely drag them out,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then it's just like the gospel works just like that too, right? Like, it's not every single one has to be a revival. It's a guy that is day in, day out showing example of Christ's love and preaching the gospel. And eventually people just be like, where can we find that guy? Why is that guy different? And then they just start catching on. You know what I'm saying? It just seems more genuine and authentic that way. And maybe that's just my personality, but like anytime you start to make T-shirts, banners, like if it costs you money to help somebody because you were promoting what you were doing, I feel like you're kind of missing it. Not all that stuff's wrong, but like I told the youth group, I said we're gonna do I called it Secret Ninja service projects, right? Because every time like the youth group or the kids ministry goes out, there's 85 pictures on Facebook the next day. Like here's so and so was helping doing this and this was, you know, I said no pictures. You can't tell anybody this is what you were doing. Just go out and help somebody. Don't even wear a church shirt like you represent Jesus. Just you go out and help somebody and then leave. No pictures, no telling anybody about it. That was it. That's just what you did. And like, I was really excited about it because it just takes all the fanfare out and gets rid of the phoniness and be like, this is what life really should be. It should just be you helping a guy.
Right.
And not calling 10 guys and telling them you did it. You just did it. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You're the right hand. Let the left hand sit over in darkness.
I feel like you got this wrong, Mike. Back in starting in the 90s, they changed the phrase to be, they will know we are Christians by our branding. That's why we do the shirts
and our sweet web design.
Nice.
That was the downfall of the Jesuits.
You know, actually, so like event oriented stuff, it just seems like it's getting out of hand, right? Like every weekend there's a conference. There's like 50 million, even like church planners or pastors and stuff. Like there's conferences everywhere. And like, you know, Dan and I were even talking about there's a conference that we've gone to a couple times. We were talking about it this year and we're like, you know, you always feel good coming out of those things. There's always like good ideas and stuff. But like some of those guys go to conferences, you know, they're at 10 or 15 a year. And like, when do you ever go home and say, implement the things that you learned? Or like, are you a professional conference man whose job is to soak stuff in? And then, like, move to the next conference as the tides slowly change and slowly adapt in your thinking. It's this cognitive process, and I think it's a Christianese barrier too, where like people assert to things in their head and say, "Here's the thing I learned. Here's the thing I know," and it never makes the streets. It always sits in big rooms somewhere. It sits in big ideas. It sits in groups of guys where we get all fired up and like, "Here's the things we were thinking about doing."
That's true. If you read the Ten Commandments and implement none of them. Right? Fail.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're like, do not steal, we should really stop stealing, but we haven't quite got around to stop stealing yet.
How shall we do that?
Right.
I don't know.
We should make t-shirts about stealing. No steal.
It's, you know, and it's one of the things that I've been kind of afraid of from seen as a continuing trend. We become a more sophisticated church base. There's a big surge in going back to theology, like people really taking their theology seriously. But part of the risk in that is that we start doing mental checklists, checkbox, you know, does Jesus say to take up your cross and follow me? Yes, I agree. And our action was that we checked the box, not that we actually, you know, bore the burden that Jesus is asking us to bear and follow him as a revolutionary. Like it is just will I mentally agree with this? And I would fight tooth and nail for the truth of that biblical passage, but my life doesn't really reflect that. And
we never actually deny ourselves
exactly
anything.
Exactly.
But I can't help it.
We would agree that you should. And in our mind, because we've agreed to that, to the statement, that's just the same thing. And like we have a very – we have like a cognitive sphere where we have people living a quote-unquote Christian life very much in their head, mm-hmm. you know, and they would agree and they would fight for the biblical truth. But it does not reflect anywhere in their lives, and they don't see the disconnect, and that's very dangerous. Because, I mean, Jesus was not he was an idea man, leading to action man. He was not just an idea man. He's not a philosopher. A philosopher throws stuff in the air, has people bat it around, and try to color their lives with it. Okay? He did that, and then did it, and followed through with the action for it. He's way deeper than that.
Yeah.
And it's just a risk that we have in even, a positive thing like reading the Bible, we read it and we're like, yes, I agree. God is good. God is sovereign. I agree. And then like, it doesn't reflect. Could I turn the volume down in your life and watch you and say, yes, he lives as if God is sovereign. Not, he just said God is sovereign. And the barrier there is that person doesn't see themselves as duplicitous because they do believe that. They very much agree. It just doesn't happen to cascade down to the rest of their being.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I've really been thinking about that a lot lately. The whole the verse you mentioned, you know, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. And like over the last year or so, I just kind of been pondering the whole idea. I don't deny myself much, and it's not the point to just make yourself suffer. The point is, are you denying yourself for the sake of Jesus? Are you growing forward in your faith because you said no to yourself? I thought, I don't say no to much. You know, I feel like a cookie.
I will have one. Yeah.
Boy, I sure could use a new car. I'll go shopping for one.
Yeah.
You know, that shirt looks kind of nice. I'll buy it. You know, as opposed to maybe that homeless family that could use some food or some assistance or someone who's struggling in an area. Or, boy, someone sure needs some help, but I got to go watch Thor, you know.
Yeah.
And so I need to block, you know, I can't say no
maybe
to
Thor.
Maybe
I should buy them a ticket. Then they can come watch it with me.
Well, no, I really can't do that because I need money for popcorn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's like, and you know, none of this was bad, but I don't know how much – do we really deny ourselves legitimately? And not, like I say, not just to deny yourself, you feel pious about it. Yeah, I'm fasting, you know, popcorn now, you know. But I mean, legitimately, I said no for the cause of Christ. And I don't know.
But I think you kind of have to set that up ahead of time. I mean, you can't just randomly go through a day and say, this is, you know.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
I mean, like a partial fast or, I mean, you pick a reason why you're giving it up and you choose to pray in lieu of doing that thing. I mean, then you're accomplishing the goal of getting closer to God instead of just making yourself miserable.
You know, I think how I think of it kind of as, Dan, is where that you guys seen the Steve Martin movie, The Jerk?
Yeah,
where he's like grabbing all the stuff on the way, and I was like, that's all,
that's
I need.
That's all I need.
So, like, that's what we're doing is we're taking the, we're taking the cross, and then we're just grabbing other stuff along the way. We need this cross and the store movie, and that's all I need. You know, you didn't really deny yourself. You just took the one thing that you agreed to, and then just, like, kept grabbing things kind of on the way. And, like, Lord, these burdens are terrible. I have to carry all this stuff that I wanted to.
Tonight, I came home, and we had chili for supper. So I had some chili. My tummy's all full, and I'm like, and I'm really tired. It's just been a long day. It started really early. It's been good all day. And I'm thinking, okay, at 9 o'clock, we have a prayer group that meets. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm thinking, man, I really could lay down on the couch. And if I could just snooze a little bit, that'd make me happy. And I'm thinking, if I snooze, I will probably miss part of the prayer time. And I consciously thought to myself, I think I really want a nap.
And I will
because
have
I want one.
And I right. will have it.
And I took a nap. And then I came a little bit late. And then I consciously kept talking. We never prayed. That's pretty rare because we pray every week and we have a pretty good prayer time. This week we didn't pray, and because we all kind of had that same. We even kind of all admitted it. We're like, yeah, it's kind of a Monday, isn't it? It's like, yeah, we do this every Monday. Yeah.
It's always kind of
so
a Monday.
So what do you think?
It's kind of a Monday, isn't it?
It's like, somebody's that was a total, that was total, that's a, what I was talking about. I, you know, deny yourself.
Yeah.
Pick up your cross. So just pray.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a scheduled thing, you know, it's like, there was no surprise about it. It's been on the calendar for a year now. Yeah.
You know, I found myself doing that with listening to sermons.
Yeah.
Like, I should be having a good conversation with God, and I will hide in my Bible, or I will hide listening to a podcast of a sermon, and I will, actually my wife and I were just talking about it last night, like we started talking about something or whatever, and I and she said, how is your prayer life going? I'm like, it's terrible, crap, it's really really bad, and like I was trying to figure out when it happened, you know, and like. I'd recall continuing to read my Bible over the last couple of weeks, and I'm like, I don't remember. I know what I've been reading, but I can't tell you anything that has changed or anything that I thought, man, I gotta implement something, you know? And, like, it was funny. As soon as I had that conversation with my wife, I still listen to a couple sermons today because that's just kind of how I roll. But, like, instead of just listening to them and letting them go, like, I took parts of it. I'm like, I got to focus on this, right? Like, usually when my prayer life is suffering, it's because there's a sin separating me from God, right? There's just something in the way that I'm not willing to get rid of, you know? And I'm like, where's the stuff that I'm holding on to that I've – it convicted me the first time I read it. And the more I read the Bible, the more that conviction got farther and farther away. And I thought, we'll be fine. We'll come back to it, right? And then I'm still rolling. I'm like, yeah, I got this covered. Yeah, we're doing okay here. I could use a little help here. Lord, you know, we'll do this. But, like, God's still back on sin one going, hey, now – I convinced you to that for a reason, you know, like there's a reason I wanted you to think about that. And like, it was a tough kind of revelation to realize that my prayer life was so crappy that the Bible meant less to me. And I didn't think there was as much connection as there is, but like when they say that, you know, they always talk about you reading the Lord's word to understand the character of God so you can be in a relationship with God, with your prayer and your interaction with him, you know? And like, I totally read every biography I could on Jesus and then didn't really – I'm not interested in talking to him or knowing what he's doing, what he's about, or what he thinks particularly on my life, because he seems pretty scathing on sin and on certain people in the Bible. And I thought, well, that kind of lens seems a little harsh to me. You know, maybe I will just watch as he judges others and leave me alone. But like I mean, that's all subconscious. But like I don't know. It was kind of heavy that you're kind of saying that stuff, because it just kind of came fruition of the stuff that I've been reading lately, and I applied it zero to my life, put no thought into it. I read Philippians, for heaven's sakes. Philippians, right through, no effect on me at all. Galatians, I mean, these are books that you read and go, dang, I'm not doing things right. I feel like I'm burying things, you know. I've been listening to sermons on the Ten Commandments, and I'm like, do I steal? Yes, absolutely, I steal. And like today, I'm like, you do steal. Like you categorize it as part of your job, or you know that it's you know, everybody probably does it like this, or this is an excellent tax credit for all people in my situation. You don't understand. And so, but the truth of the matter is, like, it's straight up theft. If they pay me to be at work for 8 hours and I talk to another guy for one of those hours, that's, I owe my company an hour's worth of money, right? And like, it may not be that glaring, but I do that. I take 15 minutes and talk to a guy, and whether they frown on that or say it's okay, I legitimately stole it. Like, there's no way they're paying me to do nothing. If I was the business owner, I'd be pretty upset at me, you know? And so, like, if you take to some of the practices that you read through and really put it to God, and he'll certainly show you. And it's the stuff that you think that it passes. You know, it's not categorically theft. It's not categorically cheating. It's not categorically not loving somebody. You know, it's not stealing. And it's all those things, right? And, like, I was burdened by it because I thought, dang, I have so much to do that I'm just not measuring up to. And it just came back that, like, Jesus says, look, if you just start talking to me some more, I'll help you get rid of these things. And instead of going, hey, I need to work on my theft and my stealing and my prayer life and this and this and this and my caring for people, if I just work on my relationship with Christ, that's it, right? Love God first. You know, love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind and all your strength. So if I do that first, the other stuff will kind of take care of itself. You know, like, God will bring it into focus as it comes, and you can, instead of going, I need to pick out when I'm stealing that day, you can just smell stealing coming and go, eh, that looks like stealing. Jesus, stealing's coming. Can you help me? And he'll say, yes, I can. I'll take care of the stealing. So I don't know. I don't know how I got on this rant, but, like, anyway, big heavy stuff. Got to pray too. You can't just read your Bible. I hide in my Bible. That's cowardly.
But prepares the relationship part, you know, really. I mean, you can't really have a relationship with a book. You can learn a lot. You can learn the character of God, but then it's just book hit. It's book, book
it's
knowledge.
A,
book
what
stuff.
If it's a big heavy one with lots of study notes in it?
Then no.
No relationship.
Ask your wife how that works.
Who did I have a...
I've been reading your diary.
Who did I have a conversation with where I said... I was trying to figure out how easily I would part with my Bible. Were we talking about that?
Uh-uh.
So, like, you know, like, I bought a nice Bible because I thought this thing will be with me forever. So I want it to not to fall apart, right? So, and I keep all my notes in there. That's the one I generally try to read from so I can keep my notes and stuff together. And I thought, if I was walking down the street and I saw a guy and that really needed a Bible, would I be willing to give him mine? Or would I, like, you know, wait, hold on a second, let me go find you a cheap one, let me go pick up one, you know. And, I mean, he's not going to get the most out of my notes, I get that. But from a practical purpose, the question is, like, to a certain extent, am I kind of overly attached to my own Bible because it's got my notes in it? That seems a little bit idealistic, doesn't it not?
Kind of.
Look at my pretty handwriting.
I mean, I'd totally have a hard time giving mine up.
Like, you open it up and you're like, oh, I had some real classic insight on the scripture right there, Ben. Good job. That's the best underline I've seen. You double underline that one. Good go. And so I feel like that I would struggle with that. And is it wrong for me to enjoy the Lord's word and to take a bunch of notes and, like, really get into that relationship style? No. But, like, would I have trouble parting with that if there was a man that needed a Bible from me? Yeah. And I feel like that's wrong. I should be willing to hand that over or buy a cheaper copy.
That's what I did. I have multiple extra Bibles at work now. I had a situation a couple months back where I was talking to this girl. I said something about, you know, well, they cover that in one of Paul's letters. And her response to me was, Paul McCartney? And I thought, you really need a Bible. And I didn't have one to give her.
Yeah.
So the next time that I was at the Christian bookstore, I bought a couple extra Bibles. I have them stuck in a drawer. And
yeah.
Now I'm ready. Awesome. I'm when it, the next time that there's a
Paul McCartney comes up.
Yes. When she comes in about every 3 months. So she should be in shortly, and I have one earmarked for her.
Awesome.
And then I have extra ones, so whatever.
Just in case. I can't have stealing the thunder from the three-month wait.
It just seemed like a good idea to have. Yeah. I'm like, you know, they're nice. They're the message, so it's easy to understand.
Yep.
And that was one of the things she said was, I've tried to read it, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been reading the message to my wife, and she gets it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm like, it makes sense to have it.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to have on hand.
Yeah.
And then I feel, but doesn't that make me feel a little guilty? I'm like, I got a real nice one. Here's this low rent one I picked up for you for minimal dollars.
It's a starter Bible.
I hope you find the Lord Jesus in it. Actually, I've read some of the cheap ones that we keep around here, and like, they're flat out hard to read. The print's real small. They're paperback.
Oh yeah, the ones like you buy a whole bunch of, in a box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of did that. Sorry, I'm the pastor around here.
Yeah, I buy a lot of boxes. But it makes me feel good about myself. Hey, look how many Bibles I've bought.
Let's get down to the brass tacks. Can you put it in a box or can't you?
Have a Bible.
How many Bibles does your church
You can't
own?
Read it. But
all right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for listening so far. Big question of the week is lots of terrible weather in the Philippines. I mean, estimating up to 10,000 dead, maybe more. Lots of folks they haven't been able to hear from. Broad question shows up every time there's a big disaster is where was God? And I think the root of that question can come from a couple different places. One is, you know, when things like this happen, if God is sovereign and has the ability to stop them, why doesn't he? Why does he permit these types of things to happen? And maybe on the other side of it, if you're the recipient of the natural disaster, is to say, why did not God protect me? Why was me and my family and my village and my, you know, city able to be hit? And some were not. And so that's the question on the table. Where was God in the Philippines?
So I have to say, this is an interesting question to me because I have not necessarily asked myself where was God in the Philippines, but in my life, in my hardships, I've asked myself, you know, where was God? Where was God when this happened? Where was the God of the universe when this happened? And you know, the woe is me kind of deal. I kind of feel, now looking back, I kind of felt like Job for a while, but in a bad way, I should say that. I think I've really been thinking about this because of the fact that I think this is coming from the mindset that society has, that we serve and are watched over by a weak God. By a weak God that chooses whether or not to save people, that chooses whether or not to destroy people and all the different stuff. And I think it's just coming from the wrong point of, you know, God is cruel because he did this. God is cruel because this happened. Or God is cruel because this didn't happen. Yeah. I didn't get $500,000 in a briefcase yesterday, and now I'm going to lose my house. Where's God? Where's this cruelty coming from? And I think one of the not easiest ways to answer that question is, a good way to start is, God never promises happiness. God never promises that you are going to have an easy life. God never promises that you will never go through hardships. You will never find that in the Bible where God says, you're going to have a lot of money, a lot of food, a great house, a great family. You're never going to have troubles, and I'm going to watch over you, I mean, to make sure that you're happy. And I think as a society and as a world, we need to get over ourselves. And I know that that sounds harsh, and I'm sorry. Trust me, it's taken me quite a while to be able to say that. But we need to get over ourselves.
Isn't there a distinction, though, between like what you're talking about seems to reflect an ideology that says, I'm trying to make sure my needs are more than met. I mean, these people are dead.
Right.
They're no longer living.
So that where I'm cut, that's the extreme is the examples that I've been given. But at the same time, we're not even promised tomorrow. We're not promised life. That's a gift from God that he has every right to take away. We don't deserve that. And I think that's another thing that we need to get across, is the fact that we're not promised tomorrow at all. So death should not be a surprising thing. And it feels weird and rude to even think about it, but the people who passed away and the people who died, God was there. 100%. God was there, and he may have been watching over it. He was watching over the entire thing. And yes, he didn't save every single person's life. And yes, people died and are hurt, but that doesn't mean he wasn't there. He's not fulfilling a promise by letting people die. That's expected. I think we can see God being there through what's going to happen afterwards. You know, how Christians and Christ followers throughout the world can band together and take care of the poor and the needy, and how God can amass, I mean, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people and millions upon millions of dollars out of nowhere to help these people. And I don't know the plan of God. I don't know where God was when, you know, if it was a thought process of, hey, this is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to cause a typhoon to hit here or an earthquake to hit here. But I think that we just need to get over the fact that It's not an absence of God. The death is not an absence of God. Hardship is not an absence of God. Hardship is a promise from God. We are told that we are going to go through hardships. And I think that a lot of people that ask that question are under the influence of, you know, God is absent where death is. And I think that's completely wrong.
So, understanding the reality that you're proposing, is that what you'd say to a man who's just been, his family's just been wiped out by a hurricane?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to go up to him and be like, God was there and you need to deal with it.
So what would you say? I mean, where he wants to know, where was God?
So, I mean, this is where you've got to start with building a relationship with God between that person and God. And I don't think you start with, you weren't promised tomorrow. I think you start with, hey, you know, no matter what's going to happen, God has got you. God has got all of this under control. And as much as you feel like he doesn't right now, he still does love you. And he loves the people that you lost. And he's going to be with you through these hardships. He hasn't abandoned you. He hasn't left you because of this happening. Guess what? You ask for it. You have a relationship with him. He'll hold your hand through this whole thing. He'll keep his arms around you the entire time. You just have to make sure that you don't lose faith, because that's when the disconnect happens between you and God.
Hudson, you're a man that's bound to have been hit with this many times in your pastoral life. Where was God? Why did God let this happen to me?
Well, that's what I was just thinking of. If I were there, you're having that conversation, and hey, where was God in all of this? I think that you know, life just happens. There are certain things in life that just happens. It's not necessarily that God sent a typhoon, or that he couldn't have stopped it, or he sent it one direction or another. It happened. It's going to happen. That's just part of life. Where is God? Well, he's here right now. He sent me to you. How can I help you? You know, and then that's where you, as a believer, get engaged in their life, and you, maybe you deny yourself. You know, maybe that's providing some shelter. Maybe that's doing some help, doing something. But, you know, that's one of the toughest questions, because it's highly emotional. You know, we look at God as the great protector, and God didn't protect me. My house is gone. Maybe a family member is gone. My job is gone. Everything's gone. Where is he? Well, he's still there. He's still the creator of life. He's still the savior. He looks at longer term issues than the momentary pain you're going through. His biggest concern is, are you a follower of him? Have you accepted him for salvation? That's ultimately the highest, most important issue in life. And I realize that might be the least of someone's thoughts at that point. You know, I'm mad at God right now. I'd say, well, let's help you get through that. We need to connect you with God, because 1,000 years from today, as hard as this sounds, what you're looking at is going to just not be that big of a deal. What will be a big deal is your relationship with God, and I want to help you connect there. But I don't have a good answer.
Well, I think that's a true answer, right? Like, yeah. Like the answer is, who can know the mind of God, right? That's a rhetorical question.
Exactly.
It better not be you. You know, like, I can't.
I think of Job. I mean, Job had everything bad happen to him. Family died, business failed, everything went bad. And finally God showed up and, hey, stand there like a man and take this.
Yeah.
Who are you to ask me? You know, I mean, I'm God, you're not.
Well, that's the thing. It seems so harsh in a reality like that. But, like, it is a certain amount of pride, right? Like, I didn't see you arguing when he blessed you with a continued life after your sin, right? Like, I didn't see you raising your hand going, you know, where is God when I deserve punishment? You know, where is God when I deserve the things that I have coming to me?
Right.
You know, and then this happens, and whether or not it's at God's direct hand or not, right? Like, you don't question the sovereignty of God as long as it leaves you alone. And then when it comes into your life, now you have questions and now you have accusations, and God's like, you know, if you've read that Bible of mine, that all have fallen short of the glory of God, and the punishment for sin is death. And you're still kicking, grace man. Like, I've provided grace for you. I've provided your ability to be in relationship with me. And I didn't hear any kickback from you when that happened, you know, or whining, you know. And now this happens, and now you have something to say. Now, agreed, in that situation, that reality's harsh, right? That's a harsh thing to say, and I wouldn't imagine ever saying that to somebody, you know, after that. But, like, it doesn't bevy the truth away, right? That is kind of the truth, and, like, faced with that question, You know, the answer is, who can know the mind of God? I know that I'm here to love on you.
Right.
That's what I know. And I didn't come here on my own volition because I'm that guy that ignored the grace. I'm the guy that still needed the grace, right? There's nothing good in me that brought me to you to love on you. I wasn't built like that, you know? And so, like, I'm only here for the glory of God and to be with you and show love to you, right? And that's all I know, right? Like, right. No grand scheme, no, you know, no trumped up bookmark, you know? If there's one thing that Christians do, the injustice of the love of Jesus Christ is they try to explain God where God didn't explain himself.
Right.
You know, he does the talking. He's his best PR man. He wrote a Bible, which is about everything he wanted to say. And individually, if he's got something to say to you, that's where the prayer comes in real handy.
And sometimes life stinks. It just does. It's in his word.
Yeah, Christ follower or not, you know.
My dad was diagnosed with cancer. I prayed for God to heal him and to help him. He died 6 weeks later. Where was God in that? Well, he was there. I mean,
he said, "I'm sorry, this is going to hurt, Dan."
Yeah, he said,
"You know,
guess what? Right. He was going to die sooner or later."
Yeah,
and so are you, by the way.
Yeah,
you don't want to
take the reality so far that you miss God's heart on that, because right in that situation, you know, God's like, "I know this is going to hurt, Dan.
Yeah,
I know
and it's going to hurt. Yeah,
and I'm going to be with you,
and I'll
that.
Carry you through this. Yeah. Yep.
And that's it. You know, this is the deal. This is how it's going to work out. Like, how do you think he felt watching his son get crucified? Right? Like,
yeah.
I know this is going to hurt. But you got to do this, you know?
I think at this point in time, you know, if someone, obviously this is, probably isn't going to happen because I'm in Iowa, but if someone were to come up to me today and say, you know, on Thursday, my whole family was killed, or I lost everything and I lost everyone I've ever known, you know, where was God? I think answering that question right now would be incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. Maybe in a year or two, we can both look back and say, well, he was here the whole entire time. You know, I dealing with my dad as well.
Right.
I remember I got the phone call that hey, your dad's on his way to the hospital. And I remember jumping into my 15-passenger van and just hauling down East 14th in the area and praying, you know, wholeheartedly, God, just save my dad. Save my dad. Be with my dad right now. You know, he's strong. I need him here. He's not done. And here I am just, hey, God, I know that you're wise and all, but I'm more wise, so yeah. Let's go ahead and go with what I want. But yeah. He's not done here. You can't call him and all this different stuff. And it's been over 4 years now since my dad passed away, and I look back at that as one of the most influential and biggest blessings that I've ever received. My faith was completely shattered, but that's because it was a fake – I hate to admit it now, but it was a fake faith. And I had built my faith on the sand. You know, I thought, hey, you know, I'm a Christian and I love God and all this different stuff, but never put any of it into acts. And God just crushing out my foundation that I had, which was my dad, caused me to run to him. Periodically, I ran away, to be 100% honest. I didn't do too great at first, but, you know, and I'm still not doing too great, but it caused me to run away, but then realize what I was doing and then just run as fast as I could back to him. And looking back on that now, it was the worst day of my life when I found out that my dad died. But it's also the best day of my life and the best thing that ever could happen to me. And God had that in control the whole time. God was sitting there, you know, Troy, this is going to hurt. This is going to rip you apart. You are never going to be the same again. But son, I'm here. I've got you. Trust me.
And you can't see that in the midst of the storm.
No, there's no way you can see it.
As a person of faith, you can hold on to it and say, okay, I know God's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm going to come out of the end of this. But it is just pure yeah. faith getting you through it.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
And sometimes failure.
Which I think to kind of bring it back is where is the perspective that even Jesus has, right? When he's praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, he's saying, you know, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will, right? So, I mean, even that perspective is to say, if God is a real God and he's a loving God and a sovereign God, I have to trust in two things. One is that he's got it under control. Whether I feel like it's in control or not, that's what makes him God and not me. And second of all is that although a loss of life in this world, it feels like everything we have from a God's perspective, it's a mist, right? It's a vapor. It's a drop in the bucket. And so you haven't lost everything. It feels like that because that tangibly, that's all that you have, that you've been around, right? But your everything is always much bigger than you can imagine. Even the everything, even if I can think about, you know,
my life does not stop here and it moves on afterward. My concept of the everything that is my existence is still much shallower and much shorter than what obviously God could comprehend. And you're right. That's probably not a lot of consolation to someone who's kind of gone through some of that stuff, except to think about the fact if they were folks of faith, where was God waiting eagerly on the continuation of their life, of their existence, past whatever that incident was, that somehow moved the needle and moved the time along under the control of a sovereign God.
Yeah, he's got Zacchaeus for putting in the last gold bar on the streets of gold heading to his place.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Zacchaeus got to work.
My wife and I, we lost two babies, and each time, you know, it was just devastation. And I can remember us just like laying in bed the next day, just kind of staring at the ceiling when the lights off, just going, man, this is, I mean, there's no deeper pain than that. I mean, there just isn't. And at the same time thinking, as horrible as this is, we know God's in this. God's doing exactly what he wants, what he needs, and you put your faith in that. What often hurts is the Christian then comes up that they're trying to be nice, you know.
The Job style like, Christian.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry, you can have another one, you know, or whatever. Like, well, God didn't want that one anyway, or you know, they always say, you know, and they're trying to be helpful. But they're just like, you know.
Isn't it those times that you just really don't want that hug? You know what I'm saying? Like,
let me give you a hug right
now.
I
just want to be me and my wife and Jesus, and I just want you to go away, just even for a day. I just want you to go. Here's the thing.
But sometimes it is the next little twist, and you have to love them too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all part of the thing. It's just like, where's God in that?
You know, I am not good at that.
What was that? I was listening to something today where a guy was talking about like his family's plan of attack when they if someone comes into his house, if someone breaks into his house, and he's basically committed to say, look, the plan is that I will intercede to this robber, this armed man. My wife and my kids are to leave, and they need to know ahead of time that I'm willing to give my life to try to talk this man about Jesus. And the likelihood is that he will kill me. And the agreement that we have beforehand is that I expect that my wife will be visiting him in prison. And he goes, if that is the opportunity that man gets to hear about Jesus. And like, it's just a perspective that we have a hard time grabbing on because we choose what our priorities are. And if you think of the flip, think of when Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, right? He's willing to flip everything on its head and say, you know, I know what a revolution looks like. I know what a kingdom looks like, and I'm willing to see that thing totally flipped upside down because this is the way I win, right? This is how Jesus wins. This is how the kingdom moves on. We're not going to do that, and that perspective, it sees his role as protecting his family correctly, right? But like the thought that I'm willing to say that I'm going to take that shot to, you know, and potentially, I mean, literally take the shot to witness that man for Christ. Like, it's just something that's not, I don't know, that's in
our
purview.
That was part of the same conversation we had when we were talking about arming the deacons, you know, who are running the church plate. You know, like a guy comes in and goes ape crazy and starts shooting up people. Like, you know, is it really to gain? Like, if in a church full of people that already love Jesus, they're going to go meet Jesus. You shoot that guy before he knows Jesus. There's a guy that's lost.
Yeah.
He didn't make it.
I think it's okay to tackle him. I wouldn't be shooting him in the head, though.
No, do your best not to kill the man before you get to talk to him about Jesus. Because what are they going to do? Take out me? Right? My wife will be fine. I'm surrounded by Jesus people. I'm going to go meet Jesus. I feel like there's, I mean.
Here's my deal. See, I figure I'm a big enough guy. It'll take a few shots to get me down. I've told my wife this on multiple occasions, just to be prepared for this. If we're in a mall, the church, whatever, I will run at him. Okay.
Yeah.
I will also be pulling out my 357 with the hollow point. You know, he will go down too. I will save you. I will save other people, but I will go too. So maybe I have a less spiritual view of this. I'm taking him out.
Can I be the official church tackler?
Yes.
Or you could love the guy.
Or you can tackle Dan before he shoots the man that doesn't know Jesus.
I'm kind of feeling bad all of a sudden, but I'm thinking, you know, if you can save some lives, I understand that the higher spiritual thing, they're going to heaven anyway.
You're just choosing to go for the lower road.
I may hurt somebody. I don't think I'm going to kill him by tackling him.
Hey, look, I mean, is this the whole thing? Take up your cross and follow me. Is this the whole thing? What did Jesus do? He didn't sit on the cross throwing Chinese stars out, right? He
says that too.
That would have been interesting.
If you remember Matthew, like when they come to arrest him, he's like, I could have called legions of angels to my assistance. Like, it's not like you with your clubs and spears and stuff could have, if we wanted to fight a fair fight, I could do this, but I'm choosing not to.
Yeah, but he had to die. That was the point.
But do you not think that he died that way for a reason? He could have died anyway. He could have, God could have done that in any way that he wanted to.
Oh, right, right. I'm just saying, I don't think we can equate it to I don't have to die.
But
my child doesn't have to die.
But I don't know if you're thinking about that right. Like, is there not something to be learned from how God orchestrated that? I mean, he could have had Jesus die in a revolution, die in a physical means.
Sure.
He specifically had him die in that way. Is there not something to be gained about the heart of God in that? I don't know.
Well, I think there's plenty, but I don't know if it relates to what we're talking about.
Die to yourself, Dan. Die to yourself.
I'm willing to die for this. I'm going down in this thing. I understand.
I just want to kill another man with me.
Lord, I only want to save the people that I want to save.
The last thing I want to do is shoot another man before I go.
What do you mean? A guy that doesn't know you? I will not die for that man. Says no Jesus ever.
I just want to make sure he shoots nobody else. I will shoot him in the hubcaps.
In the hubcaps.
I wonder if that's our call. I don't know. I don't know about that.
That's a good question.
All right.
I'm just excited.
Maybe we'll hit
it's
that.
Only a good question because nobody wants to do it. That's why it's a good question.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah. Just, I don't know. Just something about.
I've told my kids the same thing. Hey, if someone comes in, I have a loaded weapon. I will protect you. I've never said, I'll go down. I've said, that dude will leave in a body bag, just so you know.
Because Dan's here.
Because I'm the Dan.
Do you know Jesus? I don't care. Hollow point. Pow.
You're about to meet him. I better rethink this. Huh?
I don't know. Just put somebody put the think on. I here's the deal: is on this type of issue, I go back and forth. I will go to extremes on that where I'm like the guy in the house. I'm like, everything I got, love Jesus, and I think, am I really supposed to let this doofus crazy man run wild on people? I feel like I'm not, and like. I feel like those are extremes, and I will oscillate between those very, very rapidly.
I say,
how do you initiate that conversation?
Well, you make sure he's got 5 minutes to live,
and your family running out the door. What are you gonna say?
Hold on, can we start the basis of this conversation? It helps if you're not in your undies. This is why you wear sleep pants or jeans.
Oh, I gotta change that too.
Yeah. Here's the deal. You are not menacing in your boxers. Put a pair of pants on.
I don't know. I feel like I may not be menacing boxers, in a pair of boxers, they're but fierce. I think I may be more startling. Yeah.
I didn't think this
boxers.
Was going to turn into a discussion. It should have just been a given.
Okay,
man,
here's the deal. I'm going to move this to next week. I think this is going to take some development. So
the Big Easy is going to be in. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, the Big Easy is going to be here. We're going to move that to next week. Speaking of the Big Easy, a big thank you to the Eisenhower team for sponsoring Life in the Path. Big Bob Eisenhower is going to be here. He's not really Big Bob.
The name Big Easy doesn't really fit him. I just haven't called anybody Big Easy, and I thought it was a pretty sweet name.
Anyway, you go to EisenhowerTeam.com, and for all your real estate needs, you're trying to sell your house, you want to buy another place, you want a vacation home, now's the time to snag one up.
Bob, I feel like we don't have a whole lot of people that are seeking vacation homes.
Whatever. Bob can help in any means necessary. And so get a hold of him. He's a great sponsor of the show, and he'll be on next week. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. That's here in Johnston, Iowa. And those guys are awesome. Take care of all of your pet care needs, dogs, cats, birds. I don't know if they do kangaroos. I suppose if you got one legally, they might bargain with you.
I got a hug from one once.
They'll do a donkey, a mule. Anyway, go to westfieldvethospital.com. You can there's a phone number there. There are hours of operation. Lots of good information about them. You can also set up an appointment right there online. And it's really cool. They're real great friends of the show, and they do an awesome job taking care of the animals. So make sure you get in on that with westfieldvethospital.com. All right, Rick Gray, Pope style. Can you do Pope style in 2 minutes or less, or do we need to push it for the break?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Pope style advice, Rick Gray, go.
God does not grade on a curve. It's a pass-fail test. Like, non-believers tend to think that salvation depends on them being better than the people around them.
Right.
And that's not.
That's incorrect.
Right. It's.
Is that your cell phone, Rick Ray?
Hopefully he's saying you passed.
Oh, yes.
Just letting you know, buddy. That's a pass.
But it's not really a simple test, but it's a basic test. And Jesus is the great divider. So.
Right. So it's not a relative distinction as far as I may think more about Jesus than the other guy. It is Jesus.
Realizing that
Jesus, Lord, Savior.
You're just, yeah.
Yeah.
You're, as pitiful as the next guy.
Yeah.
And instead of looking at it like, well, this is what I do better. You're judging you're judging apples to oranges anyway. You're looking at someone else's worst attributes and comparing it to your best.
Right.
So
everybody does that.
Right.
Well, I'm better than that guy.
It's human nature.
I'm not like that guy at work.
Yeah.
I'm like, throw human nature out the window and just follow the laws. That's the it's already set up. It's very basic. No need to interpret it the way that you want.
Yeah, right, right. They're always tugging around God like there's a relative distinction or there's a back hair contest that they might be able to sneak in.
Well, you know what? Actually, I think the church folks tend to take it a different way. Like, this is the truth, actually. Sometimes I get very jealous of people who are very good at loving people. I'm not good at that at all, right? Like, I feel like God didn't design me that way. There's certain things that I am tuned to do in the kingdom of God, but like hospital visits and time of need stuff, I'm terrible at it. And like, I seriously envy people that are good at that. Sometimes in an unhealthy way. I'm like, I feel bad in my relationship with Christ because I'm not good at that. And the truth of the matter is, I just feel like I wasn't designed to do that. But I forget that sometimes, and I put on an air of jealousy for folks, and it's not needed.
You're listening to Life in the Path, coming at you from Pathway Studios here in Johnston every Monday night at lifeinthepath.org or Saturdays on 99.3 KTA at 7 o'clock. It's good to see you this week. We're going to take a quick break. If you're on the podcast, there's a lot more show coming up. If you're on KTA, I got to let you go. Enjoy whatever comes after us. I'm sure it'll be great. Have a good week.
You know when Boomba dances, he looks like that bird that comes in for the drink of water and then comes back up and then comes back down for the drink of water.
Sorry, I need Boomba to dance a little longer so I have some more material for my opening.
Can I shake my head?
I love the deadpan next to it. It's a nice counterpoint.
Give it another couple seconds. Don't oversell it. All right.
There you go.
If you're on the podcast, you made some mistakes in life, but this is not one of them. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, we're going to talk about violence next week. I'm kind of excited for this violence conversation.
Yeah, this is going to be good. I feel like that boxer thing should have been a non-starter. I don't know how it was up for debate.
I got a pair of is it weird? So my wife's grandpa died, and his grandma was getting rid of some sweatpants, and I kind of got them. Is it weird to wear dead man sweatpants around?
No. Here's the thing, because you'd have bought them from the Goodwill. It'd just been a man you didn't know.
I feel like I feel like sweatpants is an item I have to buy brand new. I don't know why.
Was he wearing them when he died?
I'm not sure on that. I didn't ask any questions.
You assume no, then it's less creepy. But
actually, I'd get to the bottom of that. I feel like there's no reason to make any assumptions there.
Okay.
There, live from the path. Tell me what you would have done in this situation. While dining out at an expensive restaurant on a rare night out, we were seated directly across from a nice-looking family. As I was eating my meal, I had a nauseating view of their child's butt crease.
I didn't see that coming at all.
I got to screen these. The boy was about 12 or 14, and I didn't want to embarrass him in a public place, but it put a damper on my enjoyment of the meal. Would it have been appropriate to approach his mother and quietly tell her? Obviously, the kid didn't know or care that he was exposed. The restaurant was full, so I couldn't request another table. Wow. I'm also offended by a butt crease. I guess. Wow.
I find myself wondering, it could be like, you know, plumber's pants or the saggy gangster britches.
Gangster britches
usually have the
undies.
The undies,
the undies don't move.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. Maybe you shouldn't leave the house if this is what kind of nauseates you. I feel like you should also cut off any access to the outside world, including TV and magazines. There's no possible way you aren't walking around sick to your stomach at all times in life. You know what I'm saying?
You ever made the fake butt crease with your arm?
I've done that.
Because I feel like that's just as offensive if that's your problem. Like, if you can't take two flaps of skin pushed together because there's a crease in it.
I mean who's offended?
That's the weirdest way to explain it.
I don't understand who's offended by this caboose. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's got one. I mean, it's just not offensive.
I know, but it still throws you off when you're in public.
Stop
you see
looking
it.
At it.
Yeah, that's what I say. Just it's, look a different direction. And
yeah.
Maybe your husband could do a better job of not staring at the crease. Maybe you say, hey, can you switch me seats, John? There's a crease.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. If the natural inclination of man is to look at certain things that ladies have on display, and I have to not look at that because that's the better part of valor, I feel like you could not look at the butt crack of a 14-year-old kid that's sitting somewhere near you in the restaurant.
Yeah, really. Or you could just
pull
say
it together.
You could do it random. I do this when I think I see a celebrity at a restaurant. Like, let's say I think that, say, Tom Hanks is in the restaurant. I'll just sit around and I'll just go, Tom Hanks, and wait to see if the guy looks around. If he does not, then I assume it is not Tom.
What are you going to do, butt crack?
I would have done the exact same thing in this situation. Like your butt is hanging out. And then ducked, and then see if the kid fixes
it. Who calls it a butt crease? Is that normal parlance?
The kind of lady that's offended by a butt crease.
I mean, doesn't even accurately describe the situation.
It's not even a crease is where a fold happens. These are where two things are converging.
Yeah, they're two legs have butted up against each other.
Yeah, it's not like a fulcrum.
It's more, yeah, yeah.
A butt fulcrum.
A valley can't. It's not, no, a fulcrum is things that, like, a it's fulcrum's like a teeter totter. That,
yeah. That's what I'm saying, it's not.
It's not that, yeah.
That's what I said.
Canyon, valley, I'd accept either of those.
Here's what Secular says. The first thing I would have done was resist the urge to walk over and plant a stalk of celery in the Great Divide.
Wow.
And then, because moving to another table was impossible.
Comedy by Secular.
I would have moved my chair so that the view of the young man's cleavage wouldn't have been head on.
What?
But
bum cleavage.
Bleavage.
Okay, bleavage is kind of funny. Okay, here we go.
Hey, did I ever tell you what, like, the man's cleavage is? Like, the thing that ladies can't help but look at when men walk by?
No.
Food. Food. If you're a man carrying food, I notice this at work, because, like, if you go up to the cafeteria, it digs out.
There's nothing physically appealing about men in general.
No.
But what they have in their hands, if
exactly.
It's food.
It made me feel dirty, like a piece of meat. I would walk by, and I bought, like, a sandwich at the thing, and, like, I would pass the ladies on my way to the elevator, and I'd say hi, and they would not. They would say hi, but they wouldn't be looking me in the eye. They're looking at what's on my plate, and I thought, that is the man cleavage.
I suppose they find, like, a salad more attractive or something. French fries are like,
Oh, you're a grinder guy.
World of Warcraft later, yeah. Hey?
It felt very awkward to think, as like, there was one lady that walked by, and I thought, my eyes are up here, lady.
Wow.
Stop looking at my ham on rye. There, live from the path. I am a single woman who has made a string of unsuccessful relationships. When a man is into me, I'm not into him, and vice versa. I know the problem is mostly mine. I'm very independent. I don't want a man to consume my life. Just be a part of it. Seems like the men I date want to smother me. My friends tell me that most women enjoy this. I hate it. I need a certain amount of time alone. I'm attracted to manly men, but the ones who are attracted to me are either emotionally needy or they take longer to get ready to go anywhere than I do. It's frustrating.
Neither of those sound like manly men.
Manly men.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
I have met some men who would have been wonderful catches, but I felt nothing. I know friendship is the basis of all relationships, but physical attraction is important to me. A relationship won't work if I can't bring myself to be intimate with the person. I find you repulsive, but very friendly. In all my years of dating, I have been in love only twice. Any help would be appreciated.
Dear madam, you are shallow. You are a shallow person and likely difficult to deal with, and any man worth his salt, except for the pretty boy, seem to be running away from you for good reason. If you are the problem, if your friends have had the guts to say you are the problem, you are definitely the problem. And I feel like it's time to change your ways and stop acting like you are.
Yeah, I think the kind of guy she's looking for is probably cutting down trees or changing oil somewhere. Like, they just haven't bumped into each other. You know what? Like, I don't know what she means by. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some Nancy fellas out there that will tend to take over your life with their emotional woundedness. But you don't really want to feed that, because that emotional woundedness behavior will continue on till the end of their days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but like I on a certain amount, you're looking for and she's obviously not looking for the biblical man. You know what I'm saying? But she's just looking for a guy to, like, make her feel less lonely. And really, that's a take relationship, not a mutual give. Like, I don't find him attractive. I don't feel like we're spending too much time together. You know, I feel like he should give this to me. Not, I have a lot to offer a man. I just haven't found the right one. That was none of it. It was all, here's how they're letting me down. Here's how I'm not happy with them. Well.
She's pretty self-centered in this whole thing.
Yeah, you're like a steak knife. No one wants to date a steak knife.
When she says something like, you know, the ones I do like, you know, want to consume all my time, it makes it sound like I want to be with him as much as it does benefit me. And then when, you know, his needs to be met or, you know, he wants to, he needs actually a reciprocation for me as far as time and attention. I feel like I'm being consumed.
Well, which
and
would
I
explain the
time.
Guys that she's dating, right? Only a weak-livered puffball would agree to that situation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A guy that has the woundedness and really just, you know, he'll take any kind of attention, good, bad, or indifferent.
You know, at first I was going to suggest she maybe get a puppy. But a puppy actually needs attention and someone who cares about it.
Yeah.
What she needs is a goldfish.
Yeah.
Goldfish, she can put it out whenever she wants it.
Iguana,
maybe put it away.
Snake.
Cactus.
Yeah. Cactus would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've always thought it's funny when emotionally wounded people are looking for someone. It's like they're looking for that codependent other half. They're not looking for a fulfilling relationship.
Right.
They're looking for that somebody who's going to be the Band-Aid that covers, that accommodates their insecurities.
Right.
It's like my advice is always spend a year or 5 years by yourself. Don't try to date anybody. Don't look for anybody. Work on yourself.
Right.
Focus on yourself and figure out, be okay all by yourself. Once you can do that, then you have something really worthwhile to bring into a relationship. You find another whole person.
Right.
The two of you together can be one whole unit. Two half people don't ever make one whole unit.
Right.
It's two broken half people.
And I think that is true. I think a lot of times they look for, not for someone to help them become a better person, but someone who makes them feel better about not being a better person. Like, you bring
right.
in... Yeah.
Yeah, an enabler.
Yeah.
An emotional, wounded enabler. You want to hear what Secular's advice is?
Yeah, let's have it.
Secular says, I wish I had a magic lamp that would give you what you're looking for in a puff of smoke, but I do not. What I can offer you is that you need to continue looking for someone who is as independent as you are.
The goldfish.
So you can find an attractive man whose needs are similar to yours. Absolutely. This is the basis of a strong future together. Some couples find the process of dating a smooth and easy one. For others, it's complicated, but not impossible. I submit to you, if you're dating a man that you find to be complicated to get along with, that might not be the guy.
This might be the time to
it
call
it. It might be time to go ahead and shag on out. It's not going to work out for you.
I'm sorry. Am I getting the gist of this advice as being, hey, I'm having trouble meeting the right man, and her advice is, keep trying to meet the right man.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know what? Here's the thing. It's like it's a back pat, you know? Like, there's no one that she's not saying – you might want to just hang with me for a second and entertain the idea. It's possibly you. You could be very hard to get along with and really a pain in the crease. And people are just having a hard time, you know, being able to connect with you because you're an icebox. So, but, like, that is not what happened. It's like, it's got to be other people. Other people definitely to blame here.
There's most certainly an
attractive
man.
When you have a series of failed relationships, you have to look at it like, what is the common denominator?
Right.
It is you.
Yeah.
You're the only thing that's the same in all of these.
Right. Yeah. And let's say you keep dating jerks, right? Like, that doesn't take away the fact that they're jerky, but you still indeed keep picking them, right? You're still to blame. It doesn't matter how you slice it.
And it's still a broken picker.
Right. I'm sorry. It's just not working out for you. Get some counsel. Get some legitimate counsel from somebody like, say, a local pastor or you know, a good Jesus man.
Mike, let me ask you this. Let's say that this person has come up to you and this lady's talked to you. Would you send a good Jesus man her way?
No.
I feel like
it's not a good thing
she'd
to do
chew
to
him
that
up.
Jesus
no,
man.
I would send her towards a good Jesus lady and see what happens there. I mean, because here's the thing. I don't need any of the bright young Jesus fellows we got getting sucked in by this piranha. Like, it could very well tear them away from their faith in this kind of behavior. And so we got to get them strong before they can put up with this kind of stuff.
I've only loved two people.
And I really did love them with all my heart.
But I was never attracted to that
man. Because they were horribly ugly.
They looked like the elephant man.
The goiter on the side of
the Okay, ready? Head. We got one more. Okay. How does, dear Live from the Path, how does one stop family and old friends from going on and on about their aches, pains, symptoms, conditions, doctor visits, and medications in excruciating detail? Aside from my mother, who is 85, I don't care to hear about this from others. It has taught me a lesson I wish people, other people would follow, because they are obviously not as good as me. While I do have back issues, I speak of them only to my doctor. We're going to talk about the irony of letting the back issue thing out. I try to be patient, but some folks seem to need someone to vent to, like, say, a national newspaper. I don't want to be the one they tell all to. I try to tune it out, but I wish there was an easy way to let them know enough is enough. Any ideas on the best way to handle these people, or am I stuck being a good listener forever?
Wow. You are not a good listener.
You're an awful terrible person. Listener.
Yeah. You're a terrible listener and an awful person. You try and...
And a hypocrite. I like the hypocrite part.
That's the best. I hate hearing about everyone's medical conditions. I have my back problem. Obviously, I don't like to bring it up.
Let me tell you about those.
I don't care to hear
my
about
lumbar is so sore.
Well, first of all, you need to enter a conversation with a different beginning. Rather than saying, how are you feeling, which is probably what she's doing because they're telling her, say, how are things going? I actually learned that from a hospital chaplain when I was in college.
Don't say, how are you feeling?
Because if you go into the hospital, they're there for a reason. And if you ask how they're feeling, they're going to get distracted by how they're feeling rather than what's really going on. Ask them how things are going, and you can help them spiritually. It was actually a pretty good point.
Nice.
Dang. I've actually always deflected this with bringing up some minor medical issue that I have. Like, you know, they'll be like, oh, my glaucoma's acting up, and I've had two gallstones. Whatever. I'm like, you know, I've had an earache, and sometimes it's a beast, man. I'm with you. These health problems are
I feel like my toenails grow pretty fast.
Yeah. I have this ingrown toenail that you would not believe.
So I went to have my vision checked, and they're like, it's like 20/30. You're going to have to wear glasses. I'm like, glasses? I don't think so.
I'll take a monocle.
I'd rather be blind.
So I would say, in addition to not putting yourself, say, in that situation by being careful with what you say, I don't know, maybe reorient the thought that you're not really a virtuous person. It is no credit to you to listen to someone only to complain about it later. That's not a good standard. Like, all you did was get away with being a bad person.
Oh, it's true.
Because she's judging them the whole time that they're having the conversation.
Yeah.
That has to come off on their face at some point. If somebody's giving you a litany of medical woes, and you really don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, your face is going to give away that you don't really.
Let's look at it in an honest perspective, right? Like, if someone, they feel like they're defined by their medical condition, that's all they're going to talk about, right? And so, like, you do have a good opportunity here. You know, if all they want to talk about is their physical ailments or here's what you'll find interesting about me. You know, like, if you really were interested in them, I think you could probably weasel past that. You know, like, so in between these five doctor visits you've been to today, how do you keep the time? You know, you read a couple magazines or, you know, whatever. You know, kind of get the conversation away from the medical stuff instead of rolling your eyes and being like, yep, hernia. That seems rough.
Well, obviously it's important to these people. They wouldn't be talking about it, you know. I mean,
it's all they have. I mean, my mother-in-law, she, every time that we see her, it's that medical litany. It's the...
You know what? And they're probably thinking all they ever talk about is their children.
This is the, yeah.
I don't care about your children. Don't you know I have hemorrhoids? I mean, you know, it's people being selfish. They want to hear about what they their world rather than, hey, it's a give and take. I'll tell you about my hemorrhoids. You tell me about your children.
Yeah. Everybody's hopefully happy. By noon we'll get to Tennis Elbow.
Exactly.
And we'll play some, you know, Piggly Wiggly. I don't know.
You go into if you really are bad at small talk and you don't know really how to get a conversation going and you're talking to, like, you're at the old folks home, the nursing home, you just talk about bowel movements. That'll get them going for half an hour. They'll just talk about
I take my pill. That's what gets me going for half an hour.
There are really specific areas where you're going to get multiple people that are talking about medical ailments.
Yeah.
I mean, in the general populace, that's not somebody's go-to.
Yeah, yeah.
Where is she going to have multiple conversations with sick people?
Yeah, right.
You know? I mean, it seems like you're going to a hospital or you're going to some...
She's probably a nurse.
Or, right.
Like, they keep telling me this stuff.
I don't understand. I think I'm going to start telling people my medical ailments more often in serious, serious detail. Just to test if they're good listeners
or
not. Hey,
how's it going, buddy? I'm feeling a little under the weather. Want to kiss my head? Hug me right here,
man. I got this weird thing on the back of my head.
I have this seeping mole.
I don't know how to explain it. It looks more like Jell-O, but if you leave it alone, it crystallizes. Like I put it in, I tried to lick it, see if it tasted funny. And like I, you know, I don't
it
know.
Has no taste.
Yeah.
And when I dance, it kind of whistles.
I feel like it's some kind of sweat of some underworld lord. I just don't know what to make of it.
Grossest thing I've ever heard.
You're listening to Live in the Path. Thanks for checking us out. What was it? Was there a secular advice?
Yeah, hold on. Let's see. Hang on, I lost it. No, here it is. Try this. Here's what you say. Say, really? I'm sorry to hear that. Then change the subject to something you read in the newspaper, saw on television, or something that's going on in the community.
Wow. If you want to really? Be immediately picked out as, I am trying to change the subject.
Right I don't now. Care.
Wow. So, yeah, I've been having these heart issues lately. Wow, that sounds awful. Hey, did you hear about that thing that's going on in that other state?
The price
yeah.
of peaches are going down.
Yeah. Cubs win, you know?
Storms are coming.
That's the worst advice ever.
I hate it when people, this happens at the gas station, too. You walk in there like, hey, how's it going? Pretty good. Weather out there is a changing. Yep.
Sure is.
I'll have this soda.
I just want to take a penny and leave, yeah. All right?
Let me buy my jerky and go.
Why must you hold me hostage with your banter?
Because I'm obviously hungry, and you're stalling me with your weather talk, sir.
You're turning me into a phony. Yeah. A big, fat phony. I just want to eat my jerky in my car by myself.
You know I'm in the straits. I bothered to stop here and purchase food.
My name is Get and Go.
Thanks, Weather Channel. Appreciate it. Let's go.
Quick Trip. You know what I'm saying? All your names imply that I'm in and out.
Yeah. Hey, how are the kids? Better than me? Leave me alone.
It's the same with the gas station employees that, like...
If I wanted to be trapped, I would have gone to the Circle K.
They put them through the training where they, like, got to say hi to you. As soon as you walk in the door, it's like... You know, you get halfway down the donut, and they're like, hey, sir. Hey. Still after the donut. We'll meet in about 30 seconds once I pick it out.
Yeah.
Can we do this just once?
It's like they're trying to convert you to like the gas station norm from Cheers, you know? Like you're hey! Oh. Chuck's here for the Danish.
It's two taquitos, right?
He's always here for the Danish. I know him very shallowly. Hey, Chuck!
That is your name, right?
Actually, they do too much of that, and by the end of the conversation, I'm done. They're like, would you like your receipt? What do you care?
Yeah.
This whole conversation was a sham.
It's not your freaking affair.
You have to do this according to corporate. Yeah. Give me my card back. I'm going home.
And then they always end it with something that you can't reply with a U2. They're like, stop back. And you're like, U2. Ah, crap.
Out the door.
He's got me suckered into it. He already works here. He can't come back.
You know what? I actually get kind of offended when they try to tell me about the specials. Like, I'll buy one Mountain Dew, and they're like, you can get two Mountain Dews for $3. I'm like, I don't care. I only want one. And then they act offended that I don't want their special. You sure? You should get two. Look, buddy, I run the money in my house. I get one soda. That's it. Stay out of my affairs. Just sell me the goods.
Actually,
you know?
Yeah, anytime they try to upsell you, it's always an impression that perhaps you didn't have a very good idea. Like, you don't know how to run your own show.
Maybe you can't read or something, but they're on sale.
Did you not see?
Like, I saw the big sign, but I'm pretty sure I don't need two giant cans of Monster coffee.
Sir,
one is going to have me.
Look like a person that can't read. The Nutrageous are on sale.
King size. I mean, seriously, does anybody need
it's
two?
It's a Nutrageous sale.
Two 44 ounces, you know, like your Genghis Khan walking out of there? I'm like, set for a whole day.
I need somewhere to dock my jet ski.
Hold on, let's table this. We'll do this next week, too.
We're getting out of here. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. Have a good week.